You're listening to Rendezvous with the Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet, and story is everything. We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You're going to listen to Hot Texas with the Hot Texas Swing Band. And
we are delighted to have you with us again tonight. If you're joining us for a first time or you've been coming along regularly, this is episode number 131. And who's our guest tonight?
Jack Craywinkle. Jack C. Craywinkle.
And here he is. Hello, Jack. Welcome.
And, Hello, Jack, everyone.
Jack, where are you joining us from tonight?
Right here in Brainerd, Minnesota, central part of the state in the Lakes Country.
And for those that are listening and are not watching, tell us about the friend you have sitting next to you.
Oh, he's a troll I found roaming in the woods behind my house. He's one of my carvings.
One of your carvings. So fun. Well, Jack is with us tonight. We're going to be taking an in-depth look at a fabulous book, Blue Harvest. Very simple to remember that title. Two words. But it will stay with you for a very, very long time. This is a remarkable book, Jack. Congratulations on a really engaging read. Jim, Jim's going to tell a little bit about you, and then we're going to chat in great detail. We're going to get to know you.
Jack Craywinkle is a retired copywriter and graphic designer who finished his working career in the medical imaging field. When Jack is not writing, he enjoys wood carving and wood sculpture. A bit reclusive, he enjoys the outdoors whenever he can. His parents nurtured a love and respect for his Scandinavian heritage and culture. The Otter Tail County area, where his Norwegian grandparents settled, has always had a place in his heart. Jack and his wife, Kay, call Brainerd, Minnesota, home. Welcome, Jack.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you. Blue Harvest.
I'm going to try to hold it up to the camera a little bit closer so you can see a field of blue that takes over much of the cover of this book. That's just so beautiful. Let's see. So, Jack, have you always lived in Minnesota?
All my life, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've done some travel, though.
Oh, yeah. I was in the Navy for 4 years, and I traveled overseas then. And my wife and I have traveled. We've been to all 50 states, mostly after I retired, but some of that before then, too.
Well, you also mentioned that you obviously traveled back to see relatives or in the Scandinavian countries, Norway. It says you five times. So,
yeah.
How often did you go? I mean, how many years between trips, I guess?
Well, it started in the mid-90s, and the last time we were there was last August, and we took our 14-year-old granddaughter with us. She was 14 at the time. She just turned 15. But some of our friends there have daughters that are her age, and we wanted her to meet them personally so she could get to know them. And then maybe continue the friendship on into when they're my age and get to go back and visit and host them when they come here, as we have done.
Yeah.
But yeah, she still continues to do FaceTime with her and write and so on.
Yeah.
You wouldn't, in days go by, you just write letters, but now you write FaceTime. Yep.
Facebook, whatever. So do you have maybe some friends or family in Norway watching tonight? Would you like to say a little greeting to them in Norwegian or English?
Well, hilsen til alle som jeg kjenner i Norge. Og hvor du kan se oss så fint. Og så håper du kan enjoy the show.
Okay.
That's good.
I don't know if they are tuned in or not, but I hope they can.
Well, and they may at their leisure afterward when it's in the podcast. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So your mother, you were very close, it sounds like, to your mother and grandmother, both, of course, with Norwegian roots.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk a little bit about those ladies?
Yeah. My mother, my grandmother's husband died when my mother graduated from high school, but they lived in the area that I write about in the book, and my mother's first language was Norwegian, and she didn't learn English till she started school, but they always talked about Norway and how things were, how they did things in Norway. And of course, they cooked a lot Scandinavian foods, especially pastries and breads and that, which I really liked.
No, yes. One of the characters, Esther, in the book is every time you have, she's in the kitchen preparing and baking bread, I just drool. I just wish that I could just put my hand out, you know, and it would just come to me through the page.
Oh, so good. But she also made, she lived, my grandmother lived with her two Norwegian bachelor farmers after her husband died. And she also made gammelost. Gammelost is it literally means old cheese. And it stinks so bad you have to make it outdoors.
Does it taste good?
Well, those that eat it, I guess they think so.
Yeah, very good. You know, you talked about going back to Norway, but have any of your relatives or friends come over to the States to see you?
Yeah, in fact, we had our dearest friend over there. She's in her 80s now, but she's a grandmother to a young woman who came. She brought her this granddaughter over here. Gosh, now what was that? Back in 18, maybe. And she, we toured all over. We visited all of the national parks out west, Idaho and that. And on the way out there, of course, they were just looking out the window of the car. They couldn't get over how broad and open and flat it was, because they come from, there's so much mountain area there. I said to them, if they could flatten out Norway, it'd probably be as big as the United States.
Oh my goodness. So we're in the next little segment, we're going to step away in just a moment. We are going to begin to talk in depth about this book, Blue Harvest. But why don't you tell us, not so much about the book yet, but maybe when did you start writing Blue Harvest, and what inspired, how did it sort of come to you, the idea?
Well, I started writing it in the mid-1990s, And you know, I can't just sit down and write, especially then because I was working, and so I didn't have all the time I would like to have to just getting a lot done. So I wrote on it whenever I could. But I think the inspiration came from my mother and my grandmother, and I just remembered how delightful the times were that I had on that farm with my grandmother. Mm-hmm. And I think that it not only inspired me, but it felt like something I wanted to share with other people so that they would know what it was like. And the other thing, I've always liked the Depression era, because that's when my parents grew up. And of course, I was hearing stories about that all the mm-hmm. time, and from my grandmother too.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah. We are going to step away, Jack, for just a moment, and you're going to stay with your troll friend. You're going to stay right where you are. We're going to hear a word from folks that you and we have very much in common, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. They do a lot for us, don't they?
They are good people, wonderful people.
We're going to hear a little bit about, if you're a writer, what they can do for you. And when we come back, we're going to be chatting more with tonight's featured guest, Jack Craywinkle. And we'll be right back. Don't go away.
Okay.
Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. Your author publicity and book marketing team. Experience. Trusted. Effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back to Running Room with the Writer with Jack C. Craywinkle. We're going to talk about the book here, Blue Harvest. You know, Jack, what's the significance of the title? Let's start with Blue Harvest. What does that mean?
It is in reference to the field you see there, which is blue, and that is a field of flax in bloom. It blooms in late summer. And some people have seen flax, but it's not as common a crop as it used to be. Flax is used to make linseed oil. And it's also used, the stalks are used to make linen. And that both those items were a lot more popular back in the day. And it was a cash crop. It was an expensive crop because the field had to be well rested to grow it. It takes a lot out of the soil. But when it blooms, it's just beautiful, as you see there. It's a sky blue color. We had a field of flax across the road from us when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's so pretty.
Yeah.
You know, Jack, you say it had to rest the soil. Would a farmer not necessarily have all his crops tied up in maybe flax? He might have corn, maybe he might have wheat or oats, and maybe what would he shift from field to field, from year to year, just to let the soil rebound? Or
he could do that. He could alternate or rotate crops, which they would do. They'd grow flax in one field, and then the next year that same field they grow corn or maybe hay or something. But yes, they do. They have multiple crops, but the farmers know a lot more about what they're doing than me. I worked on farms, but I never was a farmer.
Well, as a reader, it felt like I learned a lot about farming through yeah. your pen. Now, can you share just a brief storyline? You know, kind of what can we expect as a reader as we dive into the book?
What essentially the book is about, huh?
Yeah.
It is about a Norwegian immigrant farmer who was just a boy when he came to this country, but his parents have both died, and he's inherited the farm, and the depression is upon them, and he has mortgaged his farm, and the mortgage is coming due, and he needs to grow a cash crop, but he doesn't have the land to do it on, and he needs some help with that. So he is looking around, and everywhere he looks, there are people just like him that are financially strapped and need land. And then he sees down the road by the church is this widow woman. And her land has been in fallow for many years. And he thinks, well, that would be ideal for a crop. So makes up his mind. He's going to see her, because if he doesn't get a crop in that's going to pay, he's going to lose his farm, which is his life to him. That's all he's ever known. Mm-hmm. He's never been married. And so he decides he's going to go down to the widow Holmvik place and talk to her about the land. Mm-hmm. That's what gets things in motion.
It surely does.
Yeah, your book starts back about 1920 with a real tragic situation, which we're not going to go into.
Chapter one.
And then we go into the 30s, we go into the 40s, we go far up into the middle of World War II. So it's an interesting story with interesting timelines.
Mm-hmm. It was always, the Depression era was always fascinating to me. The gangsters and all, it had an air of romance.
Yeah. Yes. You, in your foreword, for those of us that are not Norwegian or Scandinavian and maybe have not even ever heard Norwegian spoken, you give us a wonderful a little kind of lesson about the use of the word or the expression YAH. YAH. And we do come upon it throughout the book, but you, in that foreword, Jack, you really tell us that this three-letter word, it can mean so much. Would you just take, it was fascinating. Would you just talk about that for a minute?
Is it yeah?
I don't know. I want to hear how he says it.
Well,
he's been saying it all night.
If you can hear me, because it's the word yah, but
yeah.
It's they speak it, they inhale it. Yeah. And yeah. I don't know if you can hear it, but yeah. That's yeah. The way
I have to work on it. I have to work on it a little bit. Yeah. Yeah.
It also has many different meanings.
Oh yeah. I think I did it best in the intro when I talked about it. It's
I think it's page 7.
The inhaled yah might express anything from a shift in thought to the summing up of an entire philosophy, or it might simply mean one's thoughts are temporarily on hold. It covers such a wide gamut of things that, and it's you still hear some of the old folks from Norwegian background around here, they'll do it, but in Norway you still hear it all the time there.
I don't think we have anything comparable. I don't think we do. There's some other really wonderful things that we get as readers that we get to experience in this book with these folks. A lot of community. We have some very stirring scenes, a funeral that is just, I just love the chapter that kind of covers the gathering of the community for a funeral. Can you talk a little bit about some of the traditions within the community that you introduce us to throughout the book?
Well, the being Norwegian or Scandinavians, they were Lutherans. And the first immigrants that came, once they had their homes and farms built, the first thing they would do was build it a church. And that's where they would meet for weddings, funerals, and of course Sunday services. And weddings and funerals down in the basement of the church. And I write this in one of the chapters there about the funeral. The farm women would bring their best, and they were really good. The food was fantastic. And yeah. That's what the chapter of the book is right from my memories of being there. And I still remember in the kitchen, there were these curls of flypaper hanging down in the kitchen. Yeah, and carrying the big heavy cream cans full of water. The kids had to pump the water. And it take two of us to haul that can over to the basement door. And then one of those big husky farm women would grab that one in each arm and take it down the steps.
Yeah. It also seemed as though everybody just knew what role they were going to play. You describe the men who kind of begin to act a little like valet, sort of like valets out in the park, you know, helping people get their vehicles arranged while the kids were doing. Yeah,
they were well known for a special recipe. You know, if some woman made meatloaf, well, that was what she would bring all the time. And the other women all knew that. So they would bring what they did, and everything was so good.
And they also knew that they had to plan things between the chores of the morning and the chores of the evening. Yeah. And so these were just we might say tradition, but these were just the way that it worked within the community. Everybody understood it, and there was no, so interesting.
Weddings and funerals were always midday and usually on a Saturday, but not always, because that was a busy day too. And Sundays. Sundays were a holy day, but the farmers had to work then anyway, because the cows had to be fed and milked and that. But they always knew that God understood that.
Yes. I know you must have
a couple thoughts. Yeah. You know, one was going to be a question, but one thought was, I remember on my grandfather's farm, he had maybe 25 cows, and of course we always had to milk in the morning, milk in late afternoon. And his schedule was something like four in the morning to nine at night, seven days a week. So, as we were talking, as you were talking, describing his day where he had a little freedom to do other things, obviously, was after the milking and before the milking in the evening. So, that's where a lot of those activities go on. You know, there's a strong sense of community spirit, I think. Seems like everybody came together when there was a tragedy.
Oh, yeah. Very much so. Yeah. Any kind of happening. If someone died, they came together. in accidents, they would always gather around to help out any kind of a tragedy. That was the community, the rural farm community. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think it's still there to an extent.
Yeah. And they did like to gossip just a bit, didn't they?
Now, it wasn't quiet down there in the church kitchen.
Oh, Jack, you're so much fun. We're going to step away again for another kind of a little ad spot. We're going to tell you one of the places that you can order books of many of our author guests, including Jack Craywinkle's Blue Harvest, which you absolutely must add to your library. And that is the Out West Shop affiliate page on bookshop.org. And when we come back, I believe Jack is going to treat us to reading a passage or two aloud. And we'll be right back. Don't go away. Story is everything. Find a great one on Out West Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Out West on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer with Jack Craywinkle. And we're talking about his book, Blue Harvest.
Blue Harvest. You have to get it.
Jack's been kind enough to offer to read a passage or two. Jack, it's all yours.
It's all yours.
Okay. I will read this one. And this is at a point, you see, when Oscar, the main character, the farmer, he likes this Esther quite a bit. But he's pretty naive when it comes to females in relationships there. He doesn't know what to do. And he often goes down to, he has crops or a crop of grapes, that wild grapes that grow along this slough out in the pasture land. And when he's down there, he often talks to his mother. And his dog, Hector. Yeah, du har det gott I vannet for sikkert. Yes, you certainly have it good in the lake, Oscar said to his friend. Men mellan oss en må arbeid viktig. Between us, one must do the work, you know. The old dog just swished his tail back and forth in the water, suggesting he liked the arrangement just as it was. Besides, Oscar had other things on his mind. Tending the vines, as she had taught him, always brought fond memories of his mother, making him feel she was there with him as he worked. And that brought him comfort. Ever since she died, Oscar would come to this place when he wished to be close to his mother again. This was one of those times. And as he carried the pails of water to the vines, his spirit sought her out. If these recent events had happened when he was a young man, Oscar was sure his mother would have known how to advise him. Now thoughts of the Holmvik woman, as Esther, would give him no peace. He could no longer function without her eventually intruding on his consciousness. But he and his mother had not quite gotten to matters of the heart. Now, though advanced in years, his heart reached out to his mother for some hint of guidance in these unfamiliar matters, but he sensed none. This is nonsense, he muttered aloud to the vines, thinking like a schoolboy at my age. I'm too old for this sort of thing. The only ears that heard him were Hector's. Hector always listened. Oh, mama, there's Yelp. There's Yelp, no, Kunjeg Bruke, so mia. I could use your help so much now. He always thought she heard him better in the old tongue. Akher bara et gammeltosk. I'm just an old fool. He sat himself on a big rock near the shore of the slough, and Hector put his head in Oscar's lap and whined sympathetically. Oh, ja, min gammel venn, kanskje bare du kan forstå. My old friend, perhaps only you can understand, he sighed, stroking the dog's head. Together they sat in quiet contemplation. Jeg ønsker du kunne prate til meg. I wish you could talk to me, Oscar mused. There is a little bit of Norwegian spoken for you.
It's wonderful.
That's great.
That's wonderful. And of course, again, to readers, just as you heard it, the author gives us the Norwegian and in parentheses, he lets us know what it is we are reading. And yeah. I love that you do that, Jack. I really love that you do that.
Well, you have to.
Yeah.
There's not many that speak it anymore, even around here.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, when you are creating a character, can you share a little bit about the process of that? Does the character announce himself or herself to you and sort of knock on your shoulder and say, hey, I want to be in that story? Or, you know, comes out of ether to you? How do you meet your characters?
Well, you're pretty much right. In my mind, the situation develops, and then I have to find characters to fit the situation. Now, if the situation is something that is based on my memories of the folks from this area, I can kind of build the character around their attributes, but I always give them their own name, of course. But I invent the characters, especially when it's one of a less significant role. But most of my characters are at least based on characters that I remember from back then. They may not be doing exactly what the people I knew back then were doing, but I see them in my mind and can see them doing what I'm having the character do. And of course, I'm not saying it couldn't have happened, but the story is all fiction, and there were no real Oscar and Esther that I know of, but it could have happened, I suppose.
Yeah.
But,
I didn't mean to interrupt. Would any of those characters be around today? If so, would they recognize themselves in the book?
No. Maybe over in the area, there'd be somebody who would read and say, oh, yeah, I remember. That sounds like so-and-so. Okay.
Yeah, got it.
A different name, of course, but they could maybe fit something together, like the mill, the grist mill. There is Phelps Mill. In my book, I call it Phillips Mill, but I think that people over in the area would say, Phillips Mill, that sounds just like Phelps Mill, you know. Phelps, had the mill going. But, yeah, so I think that, you know, there's a few landmarks and a few characters that are, my wife just gave me a note to tell me to stop rocking. I guess I don't know I'm doing it, so I apologize.
It's okay.
You look comfortable.
You know what? Don't you worry about that. I feel like we're kind of rocking right quick in there. Rocking right along.
I'm just nervous, you see.
No reason to be. We're old pals.
Nobody would know it.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to call out a name. And then if you would tell us just a little something about that. And we're going to start with Hector.
Oh, yeah, Hector.
Yeah, yeah.
Then I can read about him from the book.
Yes, you can.
In the book, this is the introduction to Hector.
Yes, please. We want to meet Hector.
Now, these days, if anyone was a close friend and confidant to Oscar, it was Hector, a four-legged farmhand. Hector had known Oscar all his life. They took meals together, and he knew Oscar's every mood. He understood Norwegian and had listened to Oscar's frustrated tirades on the bank or on government policies throughout the Depression, and shared his concern when weather threatened the crops. When Oscar was melancholy, Hector was there to comfort him. And when he rejoiced, Hector shared his joy. He stood by Oscar without judgment. But Hector was getting old and only moved in slow motion these days. In his younger years, he'd led the way every time they had headed out into the fields. Now, when he showed up in the field where Oscar was working, it was half an hour or so too late. But Oscar didn't mind. He was glad to have company and always stopped what he was doing to say a few kind words to the old fellow. He understood arthritis was why his friend didn't move fast anymore. Hector's eyesight was going too, but he always saw what was best in Oscar. Hector's background was uncertain, but he could claim an itinerant black lab in his lineage somewhere. He wore his hair shaggier than a lab, and his face was a long and narrow, with gray hair dominating his muzzle, and ears that never knew whether to point or droop. A few cockle burrs had permanently embedded themselves in Hector's tail, which still wagged at the prospect of going anywhere with Oscar. Neither of them were much concerned about looks, at least not when it was just the two of them. All that mattered to Hector was Oscar's voice nearby, or his hand stroking or scratching somewhere. They were completely devoted to each other and perpetually together.
Oh, it's wonderful.
That's great.
Yes, I just love Hector.
And Hector, I got the name in Norway when we were on a train, and there was an old man and his granddaughter, a young girl, I don't know, 6 or 7 maybe. And they had this big white, I don't know, it was a Malamute. It was a big white dog, though, beautiful dog. And I could overhear them talking, you know, was eavesdropping a little. And that's when I found out the dog's name was Hector. And I thought, what a good name for a dog.
There we go.
There you go. You want to ask about Henry?
Henry.
Yeah.
Yeah, we could. Henry's a neat. He's a neat guy.
Oh, that little guy.
Henry is Esther's grandson. I guess I shouldn't get into. Henry's father and mother had kind of split up. It was in the Depression and times were hard, and the father had gone off up into the CCC camps up north. And Esther expected him to come and get his son. But instead, she got a letter saying he was joining the army. So Henry was going to stay with his grandmother there. And he's the kind of boy who's wanting and needing a male figure in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little boring around there with no friends or nothing much to do except help grandmother and do errands and that. But that's not much for a young boy. So when Oscar comes along, he finds an interesting friend there.
Yeah.
And then when he shows up on his big tractor to cultivate the field, he's really thrilled about that, this big piece of machinery. So, yeah, that was Esther, or that was Henry. And is he modeled after me? I've been asked that a few times. But yes and no. Partly he is, because when I was a young boy, I was on the farm with my grandmother and her two brothers, and they're, you know, it wasn't a lot for me to do, no friends. But I always had a good imagination, and I could go out, climb the hay bales, climb trees, and of course there was every field, because the soil wasn't so good, there was always rocks coming up whenever they'd plow, and they'd stack them out in the middle of the field out there, and it was like a stone island out there. You can still see them everywhere around that area, even around Brainerd now. But and that's what Henry feels like, is a stone cast up from the earth and tossed in the pile there, just kind of tossed aside.
Every scene with Henry crackles on the page. He's running, he's asking questions, he's climbing, he's jumping, he just brings such a breath of excitement and freshness to whenever Henry enters the story. I'm like, okay, what are we going to do now? What are we going to do now? You know?
Typical boy.
Yeah, really, really fun. Do you want to ask about another character? Probably have time to ask one more character.
Time?
Yeah, I think we have time. Ask one more character, maybe.
Another character?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ask another character.
Well, we got to talk about the banker.
The banker.
There's always one banker that nobody likes. E.A. Stordahl.
Yeah.
Yeah, Stordahl is, he's the villain. And that's taken from my father, who was not a banker. He was a product of the Depression. And he told me about how bankers were not well liked in the towns there, because people couldn't get their money from the bank and they'd lost so much money. So bankers were unpopular to begin with. And then when somebody couldn't pay their mortgage, the bank would have to foreclose on the farm. Right. And then they'd have an auction. And I talk about this in the book. They were unpopular.
Yeah.
And Stordahl is one of them. And he's probably even worse than most bankers of the time, because he is scheming to capitalize off of all these farms.
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
He's not a nice guy.
No, he's not.
And there's other reasons why he's not so nice, but I won't get into that.
Yes.
You have to read the book.
No spoiler alert on that, but yes, read the book. We're going to step away one last time, Jack, really quickly to talk for just a moment about another one of our sponsors, and that is Jim and me and our online Western business, outwestshop.com. And when we come back, Jack's going to tell us what's happening next in his literary career. We're going to be right back. Don't go away.
Okay.
Here at the Out West Shop, we're passionate about the American West, the truth and the myth. We're purveyors of fine Western goods. We scout for unique and distinctive apparel, accessories, home decor, and general merchandise that are a reflection of the Western lifestyle. We hunt for unique artisans and craftsmen who are inspired to create decorative art you can wear based on their own love for the story of the West. We round it up and bring it to you. Check out outwestshop.com when you need anything Western.
Welcome back to Running with the Writer. We're talking with Jack Craywinkle. We've been talking about his book, great book, Blue Harvest. And now we're going to ask that question, what's going on next? What's your next project?
Well, I am working on another book, as a matter of fact. It's a collection of short stories. At the moment, I have 24 of them, but I don't know if they're all going to be included in the book. Some are better than others, you know, and they have to be culled from the herd, so to speak. And we'll see how many. I don't know how many they are. And I recognize that some are better than others, too. But the name of the book will be North of Highway 2. And Highway 2 runs all the way across the northern part of the United States. In Minnesota, it goes from Duluth west through Grand Forks, North Dakota, and on all the way to the west coast, Spokane, I believe. But the point is that most people in Minnesota think that northern Minnesota is anything north of Anoka, which is a suburb of Minneapolis. But if you're from northern Minnesota, of course, that doesn't make sense. So northern people in northern Minnesota think that's anywhere north of Highway 2, which is the northern third of the state then.
All right. And so, the stories
in the book take place in that northern third of the state.
Okay. Good. And where can people find Blue Harvest?
I believe it's on Amazon, or you can look up the address. It's Book Baby prints the book, and I think they can also sell them through there. Or if you contact me,
right?
I don't know what I should give my email or.
You have a Facebook page, and it's just your name, Jack Craywinkle, and so you can go right to his Facebook page and leave him a message. You can leave a message for him on the Rendezvous with a Writer Facebook page. And the book is also available at bookshop.org, and you can find it on our Out West Shop affiliate page. Jack, Jim has a quote he'd like to read. And maybe, I guess, maybe, honey, you're only going to be able to do one.
You want me to go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead.
Set this up. We're talking about Hector. You know, Oscar's thinking of his wife and the situation that involved his longtime companion, Hector. Walking the route that morning, Oscar could just barely recall the aching cold that had gradually numbed his mind and body. He could barely recall that, and the vague shape of Hector leading the way home through the billowing haze of snow that night. Oscar was sure he followed his dog home, but maybe his mind was playing tricks, and maybe his feet simply knew the way. Maybe, but not likely. And where was Hector now?
We have been talking with our special guest, It's been such fun. Jack Craywinkle about his book, Blue Harvest. And if you want to catch the show, it's episode 131 as it becomes available as a podcast. We're going to take just a very quick moment because we are just about out of time. Next week, join us for guest Jane Coletti Perry. We'll be talking about her two books, Marcello's Promise and Lila's Journey. And we thank you for being with us tonight. We thank Blue Cottage and Clicks by Madison and Sam Hassan and LA Talk Radio. And what else?
And Jack.
Well, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
Keep thank writing you. And we'll keep reading. And
as we always say, it's always a great day
out west. See you next week. Bye-bye.
Goodbye.